Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's B-Y-T-E.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Content warning. This episode includes discussion of drug use and possible violence.
Sometimes a family's worst nightmares come true. Back in August of 2020, 27-year-old Michael Bryson made plans to attend what some describe as a week-long birthday party at a campground in Oregon. On August 5th, while at that party, Michael vanished. Close to 3 years later, Michael's family still doesn't know what happened to him.
We first heard about this case from a guest we've had on the show before, an attorney from the western region of the United States. On today's episode, he will get into the details of this story and explore the possibilities of what may have happened that night in August 2020. On our next episode, we'll speak with Michael's parents. They will share with us a more personal look at what it feels like to suddenly find yourself living in the middle of a public story that is also a deeply personal tragedy.
My name is Anya Kane. I'm a journalist.
And I'm Kevin Greenlee. I'm an attorney.
We first connected while looking into the Burger Chef murders, an Indiana cold case. Together, we built a spreadsheet documenting hundreds of cases of restaurant-related homicides. That original spreadsheet gave way to our podcast, The Murder Sheet.
Now we maintain that same research-centric, investigative approach as we look into all sorts of homicides, including unsolved cases, historical crimes, and, of course, restaurant murders.
We don't just chat about the headlines. Our podcast is a platform for our journalism. The Murder Sheet focuses on investigative reporting, thoughtful analysis, thorough research, and in-depth interviews. We're The Murder Sheet.
And this is The Disappearance of Michael Bryson, Part 1, The Mystery. We asked our guest to begin by telling us a little about the man at the center of this story.
Michael Bryson was a young man who, by all accounts, was very nice, very well-liked in the community. He comes from a town called Junction City, which is in Oregon. It's, I guess, the best way to describe it would be it's a suburb of Eugene, Oregon. And Michael Bryson had a large group of friends, and I believe it was August 3rd of 2020, which would have been right in the heart of the first year of the COVID pandemic. He and his friends decided to do a large camping trip, which was sort of a rave in the woods, something that young people call a renegade, sort of like a rave out in the middle of nowhere. And they decided that they were going to have this party to celebrate one of Michael Bryson's friends' birthdays. And I believe the day they all went up there was August 3rd, 2020. Just a little background about that area. So they were up in an area called Bryce Creek, which is very, very remote and extremely beautiful. But it does have some sort of unsavory characters up there. It's somewhere that I have spent some time over the years, hiking, fishing, backpacking, relatively familiar with the area. And the way you would get there is you would head east, southeast from the town of Eugene for about an hour up into the Umpqua National Forest. And they were staying, they had set up camp at a place called Hobo Campground, which is at least a half an hour from the last structure that you would see as you're going up in this into this area. So this area is just extremely remote. It's old growth fir and hemlock and spruce forest, extraordinarily beautiful. It's one of the areas that, at least thus far, has been spared by wildfires. Many of these river canyons have burned in the last 10 or 15 years with wildfires, and this is one of the areas that hasn't. And so it's just a really, really special and beautiful area, extremely remote. And the Hobo Campground itself is a very small campground. I've been there. On one side of it, it looks like there's probably three campsites on the riverside. And so there's a riverside of the campground, there's a road dividing the campground, and then there's a hillside of the campground. And the way I understand it was the Bryson group had set up their party on the hillside of the campground. And I understand it to have been a really sort of elaborate camp that they had set up here with a DJ station with a stage for the DJ. They set up a dance area, I understand, and they set up a dome, which they filled with lights and made it sort of like a photo booth. And so people arrived on the 3rd of August, and I understand Michael Bryson arrived there sometime that evening, which would have been maybe 8 o'clock on the evening of the 3rd. I know that there were problems sort of from the get-go with some of the other people. And I think the listeners need to understand about this area is that I think people kind of go up here to disappear for the summer. When you drive up these roads anywhere in the Northwest, really, whether it's Oregon or Washington, you see a lot of signs that say no camping longer than 14 days in, so-and-so National Forest. But I think it's very hard for law enforcement to enforce that. And I think the result is you get people who are sort of quasi-homeless who go up to these areas and just sort of set up a camp for the summer and then maybe move from site to site to avoid detection from law enforcement or to avoid someone saying they're in violation of this 14-day camping rule. In the summertime, this area, because of that, I think kind of shady people are drawn there. There's one particular campsite down from Hobo called Lund that has a history of problems. I know there's a lot of people who go there and sort of party all night, and you would be running into a lot of methamphetamine users. I am confident if you went to one of these campgrounds in the summertime, particularly in the weekdays, people who are staying there for long periods of time, you'd run into people who are trying to stay out of the eye of law enforcement. And so that's kind of the flavor of this area. And I know that the first night they were there, they had an encounter with one of these types of people that I'm talking about. So a lady comes into camp who was just causing all kinds of problems. And I think she was having sex on a table with one of the people who was there with Michael Bryson. And they told them to stop. And she was super intoxicated. And then I think that at some point in time, there was a physical altercation between this lady and the birthday girl, who I believe her name was Josie, the person who was, everyone was there for her party, which resulted in Josie just kind of beating this woman up pretty bad, I understand. And then, but she didn't leave. So the first night they were there, they were having constant encounters with other people who were camping nearby who weren't necessarily associated with the group, but were there doing drugs and causing problems. I understand that people were kind of showing up throughout the first day, which would have been Monday the 3rd, and the second day, you know, people were kind of going down to, there's really beautiful places to swim down there. People were kind of hanging in the swimming holes, doing drugs, partying, as you would, one would expect. And then I believe it was the second night that Michael was there. It sounds like he, you know, from what other people have said, he ingested a lot of drugs, which it sounded like a lot of people were doing. If you listen to the interviews of the people who were there, LSD was on the menu, Molly, which is street slang for MDMA or MDA, ecstasy, those kind of all come under the term Molly. Ketamine was there, which is a very powerful horse tranquilizer, which young people like to use recreationally. So there were a lot of drugs being ingested, and it sounded like a lot of drugs were ingested by Michael Bryson. I don't think anyone disputes that. There was some suggestion that someone had overdosed him on acid, on LSD, by a term that I wasn't familiar with before I started looking at this case, something called puddling, which I guess is giving someone a huge dose of LSD and seeing how they manage. And I understood that someone had done that to Michael. It's unclear whether it was unwittingly or unknowingly that he ingested it, but I understand that he had ingested a lot of LSD. And then, you know, kind of depending on who you talk to or whose interview you listen to, some other people came to the party late the second night that Michael Bryson was there, which I would have been the night of August 4th, early morning of August 5th of 2020, maybe kind of changed the vibe a bit. There's some suggestion that one of these people was a drug dealer and was owed money by Michael Bryson, although I don't know how well that's been substantiated. There's a suggestion that one of these people, or that someone had stolen Michael Bryson's wallet, and there was maybe $600 cash in there. I think that was maybe better substantiated, but it didn't sound like Michael Bryson was super upset by that he was kind of taking it in stride. But anyhow, these people show up, you know, depending on who you talk to, change the vibe of the party. And then shortly thereafter, Michael Bryson goes missing. There's varying accounts of how he goes missing and who saw him last. But if you put everyone's statement together into one timeline, I think probably the best guess is that he walked off. So there were two school buses that were brought up as part of this crew. And there was twin girls had brought these school buses up, and they were kind of the party organizers. It's unclear whether they were like acting as promoters and trying to make money on this, or whether they were just doing this for their friend Josie. But the two twins report that Michael Bryson walked off the bus at about 4 o'clock in the morning, the second night he was there. And sort of everyone kind of has a different account as to what happens after that. A lot of people were super high on drugs and trying to go to sleep. You know, there was music blaring. There had been a complaint from other campers about how loud this group had been. So it was sort of a chaotic scene. But shortly after this 4 o'clock time, it appears that people understood that Michael was missing and began to look for him. I think some people began to look more earnestly than others, kind of based on their intoxication and concern levels. So they looked for him for a while. I think there was initially sort of an assumption that he was going to turn up eventually, that maybe he had just wandered off in the woods and laid under a tree and, you know, was dozing off or something, and he was going to turn up. But as more time went on, he didn't turn up. And I think the concern, rightly so, started to grow for him. I believe a group of people had left and had gone back to Eugene several hours after Michael had disappeared. And they originally had said they were going to go in and report him missing. But I think what they did, according to reports, was they had kind of went into town to see if anyone had seen him, see if he had kind of made his way back into town and was just kind of in town hanging out. But no one had found him. The way I understand it was these people then came back out to the camp. It's about an hour drive, I would say, from Eugene out to Bryce Creek, the Hobo camp. And one way, it's about an hour. I understand these people came back to Hobo camp later that afternoon after going to Eugene, realized Michael Bryson was still missing, and then went back into town a second time, at which point in time law enforcement and Michael Bryson's parents, who immediately came out to the site to start looking for him, were notified. What ensued after that was an absolutely massive manhunt that went on really for months with zero trace initially of Michael Bryson ever being found. They did what's called a grid search, you know, where you coordinate off certain areas and you put together teams of people and you grid off an area, and each team or each person has responsibility for a small portion, and then they kind of work their way through this grid, checking off areas with no luck. And this case continued to be, I guess, without a clue as to his disappearance until I think about December of 2020.
What's more fun than living out your own cozy mystery?
You know, Kevin and I love to explore real life mysteries. Well, sometimes it's a nice break to get immersed in a fictional mystery story. And playing the free-to-download hidden object game June's Journey is just like starring in your own caper.
This game is a great way to sharpen your observational skills and encourage yourself to take quick, re-energizing breaks throughout the day. You play as June Parker, a flapper slash sleuth who navigates Jazz Age mysteries with aplomb.
In between levels, you can also build up your own fancy island estate. And you know I'm all about that. You can plant flowers, float on swan ponds, and even set loose a beautiful horse. It's very fun.
We enjoy playing this game when we're waiting around for a source to call us back, or when we're stuck outside waiting for a courthouse to open up. It's great fun.
Discover your inner detective when you download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
In December of 2020, now bear in mind this area is, there are both evergreen, and I believe the word for trees that lose their leaves is deciduous. Mm-hmm. So there are evergreen and deciduous trees in this area. And the riparian area, which would be the area closest to the water, has a lot of deciduous trees. Alder right next to the water, and then kind of maple as you're going up. And then the forest is primarily evergreen. Like I said before, you're going to have spruce, you're going to have hemlock, and predominantly fir trees, beautiful old growth firs. That's important for what I'm going to say next, because in December, under a maple tree, which would have lost its leaves probably in the couple of weeks before, sort of a small bushy maple tree, they found a bunch of Michael Bryson's clothing. They haven't released what they found, but, you know, the internet sleuths have suggested that it was his, I believe it was a rainbow pair of Crocs is what I heard, and some other stuff. So I think there was a suggestion that he was wearing rainbow Crocs when he disappeared. And if you know this, if you went to this area, you would see that it's a very, very rugged area. Crocs would not be a good choice of footwear unless you were walking down the road. And so if I could describe the area where his where his clothing was found a little better, it was across the creek from the road, and it was down near the creek bed. And it was, if you went up the creek from where the clothes were found, it would be super, super steep and bushy for probably 300 or 400 vertical feet. And then you would get to a trail, a well-maintained trail. And so on the creek side of the road, across the creek, there is a beautiful trail that attracts lots of hikers and fishermen and people swimming called the Bryce Creek Trail. Down the trail to the creek, it's a super steep, rugged, very forested ravine. At the bottom of this ravine, next to the creek, is where they found Michael Bryson's clothing. There is probably, I would guess, maybe a mile between where this group was camped and where Michael Bryson's clothing was found. There would have been, you know, in my mind, three ways he could have got down there. He could have walked on the road. He could have gotten a ride on the road, if he was even down there. There's been no indication how his clothing got there. Some people have suggested, I think, including some people who have a lot more knowledge about this case than me, some people have suggested that his clothing was planted there. I don't know what facts lead them to believe that. I think the reason people think that was because it would have been they gridded search this area so tightly that I think some people think there's no way those clothes could have been there during the grid search. Therefore, someone must have planted them. I think maybe, you know, because they were under a maple tree, they taped off where all the clothing was. And at one point in time when I was out there, I was able to see that. So I know exactly where they found this stuff. It was under a maple tree. I think in my mind, it just could have easily been obscured by heavy maple foliage that then disappeared when the leaves came off in the fall. And that's why the clothes weren't found during the grid search. But I don't know. I didn't participate in the search. I didn't find the clothes. And I, you know, that's kind of all I know about them. You know, a lot of people do think that they were planted though, which is interesting to me. Why, if someone brought about Michael's demise by foul play, why go back and plant clothes there? That doesn't make any sense to me 5 months later. I guess someone could have done that to try to throw law enforcement off their trail. It just doesn't make sense that you would go back and dump somebody's, hang on to his clothes and then dump them there 4 or 5 months later. So I think the most likely scenario is that those clothes were there shortly in time after Michael Bryson disappeared and remained there out of view because they were obscured by foliage until the foliage fell that fall. And then I think it was a hunter who had found them at the start of the winter, at the end of the fall of 2020. And then there really hasn't been anything that has occurred since then in the case. That's really the last thing that anyone knows, or, you know, I don't have any inside knowledge about this case, or you know, I haven't talked to law enforcement about it. I've been following it very closely. I've listened to a lot of interviews.
What are some of the theories about what might have happened?
A lot of people have different theories, okay? I know that some people think that there was foul play at the party. In my mind, that's probably the least likely thing to have happened, because there was, you know, depending on who you ask, there was 50 to 100 people there. I am certain that law enforcement leaned on some of these people as part of their investigation. I can't see a murder occurring with that many people and that many people being able to cover it up. I don't see that as being a viable thing that it had happened. You know, I had mentioned earlier that there was some suggestion that there was bad blood between Michael and this guy who showed up shortly before he disappeared. Another theory, it would be that this person somehow separated Michael from the group and was able to cause harm to him and then do that without anyone else knowing. I think that's an unlikely scenario as well. I think the two most likely scenarios of what could have happened there, in my mind, based on, you know, what I know about the case and the interviews that I've listened to and what I know about the area. Number one, in my mind, I suppose, is that he walked off. And there is evidence that he walked away from the party, that he got upset with the twins and that he left and they started looking for him shortly after. In my mind, I think the most likely scenario is that he walked off somewhere around where his clothing was found. He got clipped by a vehicle, probably an intoxicated driver, and either they moved his body across the street and hit him under that tree, and then came back and moved the body later and left some clothes, and, you know, did that to essentially cover up the crime of DUII, assault, DUII, manslaughter, hit and run, that type of thing. I could see that happening out there because of just sort of the wild nature of it. I mean, if you're out there at night, there is absolutely zero law enforcement, right? The closest police station would even be almost an hour away. Like I said, there's partying going on there. There's drug use going on there. I could definitely see people driving up and down that. And it's a windy, narrow, one-lane road at night and hitting someone and then not wanting to face responsibility from a criminal liability standpoint for doing that. So in my mind, for whatever that's worth, that's kind of my most likely scenario for what could happen to him. And I think the second most likely scenario is that, and I think this scenario is also very, very plausible, but I think as time goes on, it becomes a little bit less plausible, you know, as a function of time. And I think that would be that he got high. We know that he was high and that he just wandered off, got lost, you know, fell into a tree well, hit his head, you know, fell on a rock, hit his head, and was far enough away or in a remote enough area that people haven't found him yet. And, you know, if that's the scenario, then some hunter's going to find him or a mushroom picker would find him, you know, maybe a few years down the road. In my mind, those are the two most likely scenarios.
What do you suppose it is about this case that attracts the interest of so many people?
You know, that's a great question, Kevin. And I could never quite put my finger on why people, you know, are super interested in some of these cases and not other ones. If I had to guess about Michael Bryson's case, I would say he was just such a likable guy. I never met him personally, and I had never even heard of him until probably 2 or 3 months after he disappeared. But then I just became fascinated in the story. He just seemed like such a smiley, like nice, likable guy. Like it could be one of my kids. The parents and the family seemed like just real down to earth people, very law abiding, you know, church going type of folk. And just that he vanished without a trace in the midst of so many of his friends. I think it really kind of piqued the interest of people. And I don't know how much you know about the Northwest or about like Northern California, but people disappear all the time from around here. And for a lot of different reasons, I believe, and a lot of them, you know, are never solved. But if you go online and you look, like starting in, it's mostly west of the Cascades, right? So the Northwest is kind of divided by the Cascades. Almost all the people live on the west of the Cascades. The east of the Cascades is kind of high desert. You know, there's a few towns out there. But if you look at the counties on the west of the Cascades, you know, starting somewhere around southern Washington and going down, particularly in the more remote counties of southern Oregon and northern California, I'm talking about Josephine County, Douglas County, Jackson County, Humboldt County, Del Norte County, Trinity County, the number of missing people is astronomical. It's almost hard to wrap your mind around how many people are missing in this area. And there's almost a profile to the type of people who are missing. And I would say that Michael fits that profile. It's young people. It's Caucasian people. It's people often associated with the drug industry, the drug trade, or, you know, to a lesser extent, and obviously Michael wasn't involved in this, in the sex industry. But the number of missing people here, it's almost like an epidemic out in the Northwest and on the West Coast. And so I think that, you know, a lot of these people don't generate this type of publicity because maybe they disappeared in the context of, you know, going to work for a grow operation, you know, in Southern Oregon and Northern California and were never heard of again. But I think with Michael Bryson's case, I think what kind of differentiates his case from all these other missing people was that he vanished at a party with all of his, you know, best friends there. And no one seems to know what happened to him. And if they do, they're certainly not sharing that with other people. And it's just, he really just vanished in the thin air without a trace, like the podcast says. And so I think that when something like that happens, I think people understand, hey, you know, this was a super nice kid, a smiley kid, a popular social kid. How did this happen? You know, this could happen to anyone. You know, how did this happen? And I think that kind of generates a lot of interest in the general public. That's my best guess. And I also think that his parents had done an excellent job keeping this case in the public eye. And so I think that's another reason why this case has generated so much publicity. I think when cases like the Delphi case or this case remain in the eye of the public, there is a much more high likelihood that they're going to be solved. And so I think that his parents have been on a campaign to keep this thing alive, to keep this thing going with the hopes that someday they'll have answers to what happened to their son.
Yeah, well said. It continues to encourage law enforcement to keep resources on it and not sort of let it slide. And yeah, I think there's something so poignant about an image of a person surrounded by their good friends at a party and then having it end tragically in a way that no one can even account for what exactly happened.
It is a fascinating story from that aspect. I think when it happened, I sort of remember the news report, but it seems like this case really started generating a lot of publicity in the weeks after it happened. And I do think that was his parents. And they brought in a lot of outside private investigators to try to help them out. They had a lot of resources that maybe some people don't have to try to augment what law enforcement was doing. I know they brought in some private search and rescue teams to work the case. Yeah, and there's been a lot of name calling and finger pointing on the Facebook page that you're talking about, suggesting that some of the people at the party were responsible for Michael's demise. I'm going to go back to what I said before. I've represented so many people charged with crimes, many people charged with crimes in concert with other people. I am almost certain that if something happened in front of a large number of people, they could not have kept a lid on it for this long. I just understand the dynamic of people this age. I understand the dynamic of people suspected or charged with crimes of this age. And I just don't see that as a viable scenario at all. Someone would talk eventually. It's been 2.5 years now, I think. The last thing I would say about the Bryson case is people need to be careful in this part of the country, particularly when they're out in remote regions. There is a criminal element in rural Northwest America that if you come across them in an area like this, you could be in trouble. A lot of these people who are in rural Oregon are heavily involved in the drug trade, the drug industry, and in using drugs. And they're also not trying to be found, seen, or exposed by anyone. And so for your viewers who are from that part of the world or are thinking about camping in those areas, I would just advise people to be careful, exercise caution, and kind of know where you are and know what the dangers are in this area. When I started you know, working in some of these more rural counties in the Western United States as an attorney, I was just flabbergasted at the level of criminality that was going on in some of these small towns. And so just as sort of a cautionary tale, you know, some of these areas, although extraordinarily beautiful, are very remote and are not necessarily safe places to be if you encounter the wrong person or if you're in the wrong place at the wrong time. There are other unsolved homicides in the Michael Bryson area at campgrounds. One that comes to mind was an elderly couple was murdered in a campground not too far from where Michael Bryson and his party was. I want to say this was probably 17 or 18 years ago, and that one still hasn't been solved, and there's no apparent motive, and no clues, no motive. Just frightening to me to think that could happen camping. And there was another case also very close to where Michael Bryson was disappearing, where a young couple was fishing and camping and perhaps having sex out in the woods at a place called Fall Creek, which is pretty close to Bryce Creek. And they were murdered at this campground called Broken Bowl in Fall Creek. And that case was finally solved through genealogical DNA, but it wasn't solved until, I don't know, 30 years after it happened. And the perpetrator was dead by the time they had solved it. So I'm kind of rambling a little bit here, but these are beautiful areas that we're talking about, but they're also areas that can be very dangerous. And for those people who are thinking about going into these areas, I would advise them to exercise caution.
We would like to thank our guest for sharing the story with us today. As a reminder, our next episode will feature an interview with the parents of Michael Bryson, which will be a much more personal look at this case. In the meantime, if you want to learn more about this case, you can join the Let's Find Michael Bryson group on Facebook. We will include a link to the group in the notes to this and our next episode.
Thanks so much for listening to The Murder Sheet. If you have a tip concerning one of the cases we cover, please email us at murdersheet@gmail.com. If you have actionable information about an unsolved crime, please report it to the appropriate authorities.
If you're interested in joining our Patreon, that's available at www.patreon.com/murdersheet. If you want to tip us a bit of money for records requests, you can do so at www.buymeacoffee.com/murdersheet. We very much appreciate any support.
Special thanks to Kevin Tyler Greenlee, who composed the music for The Murder Sheet, and who you can find on the web at kevintg.com.
If you're looking to talk with other listeners about a case we've covered, you can join the Murder Sheet discussion group on Facebook. We mostly focus our time on research and reporting, so we're not on social media much. We do try to check our email account, but we ask for patience as we often receive a lot of messages. Thanks again for listening.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig. Inspiring kid confidence.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.